It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
630 Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.
Good to have you tuning in tonight. Coyotes lead the Jets 1-0 after two periods late in the second. Vancouver up 2-1 on the Canadiens. The Tentacle team leading the Sabres 5-3 early in the third. And just getting underway in Calgary, it's the Penguins and the Flames. Pittsburgh here on Wednesday. Furnace Family Oilers Hockey face-off show at 6. The game will start at 8. Halfway through the second quarter, Monday Night Football, Seattle leading 7-3 in Washington. Appreciate you checking out the show tonight. We are going to go to the CertainTeed hotline. CertainTeed professional grade building materials. And it's my good buddy Blake Dermott standing by. Blake, how are things?
I'm doing well, Reed. Things are good.
Good. It's good to have you on the show, of course, as always, so I can learn a little bit about football, hopefully. we haven't talked. I guess it was a week ago today in the good old sports terminology. The Edmonton Elks blew it up. You covered the season as closely as anybody, and it was a frustrating one. First of all, I'll ask you from two perspectives, just your perspective as an analyst. What do you think of the team going nuclear, basically? Like, it wasn't like, okay, we'll fire this guy and let somebody else decide about the rest. Like, they got rid of the three biggest decision makers in the organization.
Well, when you have the season that the Elks had with only three wins, I think that was something that was going to happen. It just And whenever you're firing people, people that have been hired to do that work, that's always a tough decision. And but when you're professional sports, is all about it's all about successes and wins. And having three wins on a season is not something that you're going to typically see guys stick around for. And I was not surprised that they blew it up. I was surprised that it happened as quickly as it did. There are some people that I felt a little bit bad for, because I think that somebody like Jamie Elizondo, who was in a tough situation right from the get-go, I think Jamie Elizondo is a decent guy and a good coach. I mean, you don't get to a position of being hired as a head coach unless you have a pretty strong resume, and I think that it was a tough situation for him this year. But when you're the head guy and you're in charge of that on-field product, and that on-field product isn't very strong, I mean, everybody's hired to be fired. And that was the case with Jamie, along with the other guys today or last week.
Yeah. I talked to an Elks player, not for attribution was the terms of the conversation, but he said, he said, all the starters and the guys who were playing, the effort level dropped off. He said there might have been some players on the periphery of the roster who maybe lost a little bit of interest as the season went on. And he said he kept trying till the end of the season, but he also said, the last few weeks, you're just closing your eyes and trying to punch your way through it because there's not going to be a playoff spot. I know you mostly play. I don't know if you ever played on a team you wouldn't have played on a team that missed the playoffs. But like, I know Rob Brown from our hockey broadcast has said, when a coach gets fired as a player, even if he didn't like the coach, you feel a little bit embarrassed. I mean, what do you think it would be like as a player waking up Monday and hearing like, oh my God, all my bosses are gone?
Yeah, no, I think Rob Brown is right in that you not only do you feel embarrassed, but you feel a little bit, you feel responsible to some point. And there were instances where I saw coaches get replaced in the time that I played, and in some cases, I was happy that they were gone. They were this was a situation that wasn't going to fix itself. And this is a case in all professional sports. Sometimes a new face and a new voice is just what the doctor ordered, and hopefully that's going to be the case going forward with the Elks.
The last time the Elks had a really poor season, and I know they missed the playoffs once under Jason Moss and, you know, scraped into the crossover position a couple times, but the last time they had a really poor season was 2013. They were 4-14 and, you know, we're out of it fairly early, but I think it was six games they lost by less than a touchdown. Riley was coming on, and I think a lot of people left that season feeling like, okay, you know, maybe there's going to be a step forward here. Yeah, you know, Kavis got let go. Chris Jones came in. But there were some exciting games that season, and I think some players you wanted to build around. I'm curious if there were any players that really impressed you this season that made you think, okay, like that's a guy that needs to be back because there's something there.
Well, I think the running back situation over the last number of games, last three, four games, with Fletcher having a really strong performance. And, you know, this is a young guy. He hadn't really played a game since 2019, I think, when he started a game when he was in college. And he came in and did a really nice job at the running back position. And I thought there was some nice play from the defense. The defensive line was consistent. Their defense, for the most part, all season was very consistent. But from an offensive standpoint, obviously, when you get rid of your franchise quarterback because you just don't feel that you're getting two things, you're not getting the leadership, you're not getting the play from them, then that's a critical blow to an organization because that position is so, in football, it's just such an important position. And going forward, that's a big question mark for the Elks. Do they have the right guys that are going to be pulling strings next year? And you know, coming in with a new offense coordinator, new head coach, that's going to be all eyes are going to be on that position going forward.
Yeah, and still weird to me that Arbuckle didn't play, didn't even dress. You know what I mean? Like, because they traded for him and then re-signed him, and then what, had to give up another pick because they did that, and he never even was in uniform. And now, well, there's going to be a new coach and GM, and who knows what he thinks of Nick Arbuckle.
Yeah, well, you know, I the thing about Nick Arbuckle is he's got a little bit of a resume, you know, I mean, everybody's hoping that he can get back to the form that he had when he was in Calgary. But I think it would have been very unfair to that player to bring him in and to put him into a situation, as you mentioned, where some of the players and starters and veteran guys had kind of checked out. And you're going to put that guy into a situation where, you know, ultimately there's going to be, I mean, everybody around the organization, I'm sure everybody was not surprised that the changes were made, but you're going to put him into a situation where it's not even going to be the same next year. So what are you going to learn from that? What are you going to learn from him being in that situation, playing around guys that, let's just say probably, I would say 25 to 30% of that roster is going to be different next year. And I don't think you're not going to gain anything from putting him into a tough situation and risk getting him injured.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, yeah, obviously the Elks say they want to have a new GM by the end of the calendar year and a new president by the end of January. And I assume a coach would come around that time as well, because then you got to go into free agency in February. So there will be a lot of things to discuss there. All right. Yesterday, I did not get to see much of the Hamilton-Montreal game. I watched the Saskatchewan-Calgary game with a very good friend of mine, Blake, who is a Saskatchewan fan. Please don't hold that against me. And I found myself...
We've all got them in our closet. We've all got them.
I found myself watching him more than I was watching the game, especially as it... he sat down before the game and he said, you know, as I've learned, especially from hosting Oilers broadcasts, fans tend to be very pessimistic about their own teams for whatever reason. And we sat down to watch the game and he said, we're going to lose on a Paredes field goal on the last play. At the end, I said, hey, Paredes missed. He missed and you guys won.
From the standpoint, not being one to ever have been known to cheer for Calgary, but it's always difficult with a guy like Rene Paredes, who's had such a great career to this point. And I think he'd only missed four field goals all season, and he missed three of them in the most critical game. And, you know, it was just one of those things where they had done enough to win, and the Stampeders, and especially when the Rough Riders are helping you out by throwing four picks, that very unheard of to see a team throw four interceptions and win a game. And but from the standpoint of excitement, I thought it was a classic CFL game in that it you know, when they needed to score in the second half, they came up, both teams marched the ball down the field and scored and kept it exciting. And then, of course, going into overtime and coming down to a missed field goal. And I just thought it was a great game to watch. And watching the other game on the other side, you know, Montreal started out well, first drive, go down the field, and much like the way the Elk season was this year, they first game of the year drove the ball down the field like a hot knife through butter and then had to kick a field goal. And then after that, Harris just looked like he had looked for the Elks this year. He just looked like I'd never seen a player get so old so fast. He struggled with getting rid of the ball. His lack of mobility was evident. The balls were coming out of his hand fluttering. He got pounded. He fumbled. He just looked like somebody that was, I don't know. Is he even still relevant as a quarterback in this league going forward?
Yeah, I would. I think that's a fair question, because there's so many games that just either didn't perform, or like you said, he might drive the ball a bit, but then it wouldn't lead to touchdowns. Okay, so are you sticking with? I don't think we're going to talk before Sunday. You know what I'm going to ask you? Are you calling a Saskatchewan upset? Are you ready to predict that at 7:16 p.m. the Monday before the game on Inside Sports against Winnipeg?
Well, certainly if they play the way they did this week, they're not going to beat the Bombers. They can't go into that game with, you know, giving the ball to the Bombers that many times through interceptions. So Fajardo has got to play better. But you know, here's the thing, you know, I don't know how many times I played on a team that was in first place going into that Western final, and we lost. They have a home game. I mean, all the pressure is on the Bombers. They've had coming off a week bye. I'm sure they're going to have healthy bodies and all that kind of stuff. They're going to have a big crowd, but half of that crowd, you know, is going to be green. So it's going to be a fun game to play, a fun game to watch. And I'm not going to hang my hat on the fact that I think the Rough Riders are going to win this. I think they can if they play well. But I would suggest that this is a game that, now watch. I'm going to pick the Bombers and they're going to go out and lose. But I think the Bombers are going to win this game. My thought is the Grey Cup game because I think Toronto's playing very well. And there's something about that Hamilton team and the fact that the last time they played the Bombers in the Grey Cup, they lost. I think this is a team that is good enough. Have they played to the level that they need to all season? No. But there are times when they play, and both Toronto and Hamilton, when their defenses are very strong and their quarterbacks are playing very well. So, and if Hamilton can beat Toronto, that's going to be a fun game to see Hamilton in playing at home against the Bombers. It'll be a great game, and anything can happen at that point.
I'm looking this up on the fly. I think I got it here. From 88 to 2001, the home team, so the first place team, lost the West Final 11 times in that 14-year stretch, and that overlapped with most of your era as a player, right? So, I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah. All right. Like we played in, I think in my 14-year career, we played in 9 Western Finals and only made it to the Grey Cup 5 times. So we lost a lot, and then we won a lot of those Western Finals because we were second place going into the home into Calgary to play them and beat them. So yeah, it's a tough thing to do to win that game. And I know that maybe since that time historically that the home game has meant a little bit more, but it used to be almost a curse to have that home home game. So it's going to be, like I said, there's so much pressure having played in those games, have so much pressure on you in front of your fans to produce a win to put you into the Grey Cup. And we'll see how they handle it.
All right, quickly before I let you go, I know you're a New England Patriots fan. 6 wins in a row, baby. They're back on top of the AFC East. Belichick's a genius.
Well, Mac Jones is playing pretty good, and that defense of the Patriots is so strong. And it's interesting over the last couple of days just listening to how many pundits are saying that this could be the team, that it could be a Bucks and Patriots Super Bowl. Yeah.
Who would you cheer for? You cheer for the Patriots, right?
No, I think I would cheer for the Patriots. Although, you know, I mean, I enjoy Brady. I'd probably just sit there and eat lots of wings and just have way too much to drink to just watch it.
Well, that's every Super Bowl. Blake, this was a blast as always. Thanks for your perspective on the Elks and the CFL Division semis and a quick look ahead to Sunday. Hope you're doing okay, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Reed. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
That is Blake Dermott, our Elks analyst here at 630 Chet. I mean, I just enjoy having Blake on the show so much. And yes, he has been most of the season hinting at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, far and away the best team in the league during the regular season, as having something go wrong for them in the playoffs and perhaps not winning the Grey Cup. So, but he was not ready to commit to that happening on Sunday when they host Saskatchewan in the West Final. All right. Well, we'll see. 780-496-0063 is the hotline and the text number. You can email insidesports@630ched.com. Gene Principe is coming up between 7:30 and 8, and we'll get to some comments Dave Tippett made about Phil.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Philip Broberg. Oilers' first-round draft pick from 2019 is defenseman Philip Broberg. He's now played four games in the NHL, 14 and a half minutes in his first game, then 19 minutes, then 21 and a half, then 23 and a half Saturday in Vegas. Dave Tippett asked about Broberg playing a lot.
Playing a lot of a necessity right now. Those guys come back, we all play ahead of them. He's a good young player, but let's be realistic.
All right, so interesting from Tippett there. A good young player, but let's be realistic. So once Keith and Nurse come back, maybe Cuckoo, I think Philip Broberg probably back to Bakersfield if everybody else is healthy. I did ask Tippett about Broberg adjusting to the speed and size of the National Hockey League.
He's done well sometimes, and sometimes he's a little behind. That's just part of learning. You know, he's if you look at Puljujarvi's goal the other night, he goes in, gets things shut down, and creates a loose puck for our centerman to get. And there was four or five times in the game when he was late getting things shut down, and things got a little more chaotic than they should have in our own end. So that's just part of being a young defender playing big minutes.
All right, that is Dave Tippett on Philip Broberg. So, again, I think a pretty good indication that unless there are continued injuries, Philip Broberg will not remain with the Oilers for the entire season. Maybe he'll be up a little bit later on. Okay, 780-496-0063. Gene Principe is coming up. You'll get the scoreboard update as the Penguins, who are the Oilers' next opponent, are going at it with the Flames, all ahead on Inside Sports.
Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.